Well, we've had quite a week in the Delafield house this past week. It's just one adventure after another. That's just how life is, isn't it? And many of you guys know that we've got two boys. We've got a 5-year-old boy and a 4-year-old boy, and they are just, they're boys. They are crazy. They're nuts. They're fun. Originally, we wanted to have 4 kids. But after having 2 kids, we realized how much time we want to spend with them and how much time we really get to spend with them. And we realized how expensive kids can be. And they're just 4 and 5. I mean, you know, we're not even to the point of high school and extracurricular activities and college. So, you know, we just thought we'd stop at 2. Then Jess, my wife, started like forgetting things and not, you know, thinking through things, and she was getting words mixed up. And if any of you guys know my wife, she's a sharp lady. She's got it upstairs, and that's great. I benefit from that greatly. But she started, you know, just forgetting and switching words out. And so I said, it's just like you got pregnant brain, you know, because that's when she was pregnant with each of the boys, she got stupid. But, you know, it was just pregnant brain, though. It was just pregnant brain. And so it started, it was kind of like that, and for a little while, too. And then while that was happening, something didn't happen that should have been happening. If you know what I'm talking about, you know. And so we were a little concerned. And so, you know, I said, well, Jess, you need to go out. You need to get a pregnancy test. You need to, we need to know. And so she went out and got a pregnancy test. April Fools. Oh! Hey, you guys. How often do you get to preach on April 1st? How often do you get to do an April Fool's joke from the pulpits? Oh, my goodness. You know, although I did that, last week it's always adventure our house. This didn't happen last week. That is a true story, though. The test came back negative. It was months ago when that happened. So it was a little interesting for a couple weeks there. But, I didn't want to just play an April Fool's joke on you. I want to introduce our subject for the next month. With April 1st being the first Sunday, our whole month is being called April Fools. And we've got variations here of the logo as April Fools. And the basis of this is that sometimes God does unexpected things. Sometimes God does the unexpected, but He tends to do the unexpected more frequently than sometimes. So we can put a big surprise up there and mark through sometimes and underline does. God does the unexpected. That's what our God does. He operates in the expected. And that's the idea of this series that we're going to be looking at is April Fool's surprise. God does the unexpected. And constantly we see this, consistently rather, we see this throughout the Bible. We see God using the most unexpected people to accomplish His tasks. And when Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians, this passage here that I'm going to read for you, it really sums up this idea. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 26 says, "Brothers, think of what you were before you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many of you were influential. Not many of you were of noble birth. But God chose the what? Foolish things." April Fools. That's what we want to be this month. "He chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong." We are going to be all over the place in this series, little ADD series. Today we're continuing our Acts series that the first Sunday of every month of 2012. We're visiting the book of Acts, and we're going to have a message out of the book of Acts. And so today is our message out of the book of Acts. And it's a message where God does the unexpected in calling an enemy of the church to be the forerunner of the church. A really, really neat story. Next week, since it's Easter, we're looking at the surprise event of the empty tomb, where anyone who experiences the empty tomb, whether it was John and Peter 2,000 years ago or someone here today experiencing the empty tomb always results in a surprise. You know, you didn't expect that to happen. You didn't expect him to show up. You didn't expect that event. So that's what Easter's going to be about. And then the following 3 weeks, we're going to dive a little deeper into the specifics of how we can be involved in being April fools. Fools in April, fools for Christ, fools that God will use to shame the wise, because that's what he does. He does the unexpected, and he uses fools. He uses whatever we have in our hands, whatever, however little we think it may be, he can use it at his disposal, and he does amazing things with our little things, little material things we have in our hands. God can use people no matter what their past is or no matter what their current lifestyle is. He can use them for acts of greatness. God can use the most insignificant looking people through the world's eyes to make a lasting impact not only on the world, but to make a lasting impact on the kingdom. So during this series, we're going to be, during those last 3 weeks rather, we're going to be looking at how a little boy's lunch can feed thousands. How just a little offering of just a couple coins, the fraction of a penny, gets Jesus's attention. You know, surprise. You wouldn't have expected that to grab his attention. How a small army wins a big battle. How a prostitute was praised for her faith. Surprise. Not only praised for her faith, but she was included in the genealogy of Jesus. She was Jesus' great, 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 great grandma. And she was a prostitute. God can use anybody. And how a little man in the world's eyes became a famous king for God's nation. So those are just a few of the April Fools sounding stories that we have in the Bible that we're going to be looking at this next month. And all of them have this element of surprise that God does the unexpected. So let's go and write that down. God does the unexpected. Flip your bulletins over and take some notes. God does the unexpected when you least expect it. So expect it. Pretty simple. Logical. God does the unexpected when you least expect it. That's why it's called the unexpected, because you don't expect it. So we should expect the unexpected out of a God like our God. This morning, I'm going to share our story from the book of Acts, and I'm just going to read it. It's not going to be up on the screen. It's in Acts chapter 9, and you can turn there and follow along later if you'd like. But if you turn there, I'd like for you just to sit and listen and just absorb the narrative of this story. Sometimes we study our Bibles just so much that they become words and definitions and phrases, and this is what it means in the Greek, and sometimes we don't step back enough and really absorb the forest. We inspect the leaves and the bark and the trees sometimes if we stand back that much. But this morning, I just want us to see the forest. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way — that's what they called Christians, the church at that time, the way — whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. So I think that's pretty interesting, because a lot of people say that Paul was a chauvinist. And right here, it's obvious that he's equal opportunity. He was going to arrest men or women. Had no problem with that. So as he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but they did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. In Damascus there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision, "Ananias." I mean, that's how he would call to him. He knew his name. "Ananias." "Yes, Lord," he answered. The Lord told him, "Go to the house of Judas on Straight Street." You know, this is first century GPS. "Go to the house of Judas on Straight Street and ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. In a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias come and place his hands on him to restore his sight. Lord, Ananias answered. I like how Luke adds the pause in there. Yeah. Lord, I've heard many reports about this man and all the harm he has done to your saints in Jerusalem. And he's come here with authority from the chief of priests to arrest all who call on your name. So he's like, God, are you sure? Do you really know what you're talking about here? This is Saul from Tarsus. He's a bad guy. What did I do wrong? But the Lord said to Ananias, go. Dude, I got it under control. I know what I'm doing. Bible says this. That's paraphrased. Go, this man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name. Then Ananias went to the house and entered it, placing his hands on Saul. He said, brother, Saul. I think it's interesting he calls him brother. He's already accepted that he's part of the family. Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here, has sent me so that you may see again and be filled with the Holy Spirit. Immediately, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he could see again. He got up and was baptized. After taking some food, he regained his strength. Saul spent several days with the disciples in Damascus. At once, he began to preach in the synagogues that Jesus is the Son of God. So he was on his way into Damascus with papers to arrest Christians, and then he finds himself days later preaching in the synagogues that Jesus is Lord. It's amazing, the change. All those who heard him were astonished and asked, isn't he the man who raised havoc in Jerusalem among all those who call on his name? And hasn't he come here to take them as prisoners to the chief priests? Yet Saul grew more and more powerful and baffled the Jews living in Damascus by proving that Jesus is the Christ. You go on to read about Saul, who became Paul, and you see just the impact that he had on the church, on the world. April Fool's. Surprise. You didn't see that one coming. The Jews wouldn't have seen it coming. The Christians definitely wouldn't have seen it coming. Here's Saul, who persecuted the church, and now he's preaching Jesus Christ. April Fools. You should write down something here from this story. God will interrupt your life. He will. And you want him to. You're going to find out why you want him to in a minute, but you do. God will interrupt your life because he has a will, an agenda, and a plan. And he's going to go about his will. And he has his priorities set out because of his agenda. And he knows what the results are that he desires. He knows his end game. He knows point B. He knows where he's headed. He has a plan to accomplish his goals. God plans his work and he... Say it. Some of you guys know it, don't you? Plans his work and he... works his plan. Have you guys not heard that? That's old school. He plans his work and he works his plan. And that's what he does. Now the cool part is that when in those times when God interrupts your life, that's actually your invitation to join in his plan, to join in with his agenda, to align your will with his will. Look at how God interrupts Paul's life in this story. It's a pretty abrupt interruption. He confronts him on the road to Damascus. Blinds him with his appearance. He interrupts Paul's agenda. He interrupts Paul's plan. It's very clear in this story what Paul's agenda was, what Paul's plan was, what Paul's point B was, and Jesus interrupts that. Look at how God interrupts Ananias' day. I mean, sometimes we pass over him. He's a really important part of this story. Look at how God interrupts his day. Surprise. I'm going to send you to one of the more notable enemies of the church, of the way. Good luck. This conflicted with Ananias' will. He didn't want to go do that. This guy was, you know, he was arresting Christians. He had legal documentation to arrest Christians. He wasn't just some vigilante. But listen to this, and write this down. God's interruption is your invitation. Do you hear it? God's interruption is your invitation. God's interruption in your life, how he interrupts your desires, your plan, your will, your agenda. This is God's invitation to join in his plan, to join in his will, to join in his agenda. Paul's story is told two other times in Acts. A total of three times this story is told, more than any other story in the book of Acts. It is a paramount story. It is a major event in the book of Acts, in the beginning of the first church. He became a major part. He reached out. He was a missionary to many churches, starting churches. And then as you look in your Bibles, you'll see books like the book we read out of earlier, 1 Corinthians or Ephesians or Philippians or 1 Timothy or Titus or Romans. He wrote letters to all of these different Christians and to all of these different places, different churches, different groups of Christians, different regions. And those letters became books in our Bible. Paul was a prominent part. Paul was who Saul became. He just went through a name change, Saul to Paul. Paul recalls the exact moment and location where God interrupted his life and he invited Paul to become a part of his plan. Do you remember that day? I think a lot of us do, those of us who are Christians. You remember that day when, that very first day, the day when you gave your life to Christ. And you remember that interruption. You remember when God stepped into your life and he interrupted everything that you had planned. He interrupted everything that you stood for. He interrupted your principles and your morals. And if you're a Christian here this morning, then you bowed to him and you said, I'm going to respond to your interruption in my life. I think every one of us would remember where we were when that happened. I remember when I gave my life to Christ, it was September 21st, 1991. It was unseasonably cold at this Christian camp that we went to for a retreat, and it was time. And me and some friends, we wanted to get baptized, and so we went out to the camp pool, and it was 50 degrees outside, and steam was coming up off the pool because it was so cold outside. And man, I just remember it like it was yesterday. And I even have amnesia in between now and then, so I still remember that event. And I think a lot of us remember that. The big question for a lot of us who are Christians is how often have you allowed God to interrupt your life since that day? Because it's not just a one-time interruption. Because God's constantly moving our will closer to his. He's constantly including us in his plan and his agenda, and that involves interruptions that we need to view as an invitation. How many of us remember the last time when we had an Ananias story? When we as a Christian were interrupted by God and asked to do something that took some risk, that took some sacrifice, that took some obedience. And we viewed that interruption as an invitation. See, I don't think a lot of us can remember a lot of those events. Because the sad part is that a lot of us have ignored the interruption. We viewed it as just that, an interruption. We didn't view it as an invitation. And what did we miss out on? We'll never know. And look at Ananias. Look what he was faced with. He was faced with quite a dilemma. His life was interrupted with the request to go and baptize Saul of Tarsus, a known enemy of the church. He recognized the interruption and he accepted the invitation. And look what happened. He got to be part of a major story in the book of Acts. I think about this a lot for myself. What exciting kingdom things have I missed out on because I viewed God's interruption as an interruption, as a nuisance, rather than viewing his interruption as an invitation? What have I missed out on? What did God want to include me in on that I denied him, that I excluded myself? What part of God's will did he have for me to play that I decided not to be a part of, and I missed out on some action. I missed out on some excitement. What adventures have you missed out on? I mean, you won't know, because if you never took him up on the invitation, then the moment passed you by. What part of God's plan did you turn down? What part of God's will did you ignore? What part of God's agenda did you choose to not be a part of because you simply didn't see that God was inviting you to be part of it? Church, this year, our theme for the year, I think we got the slide on this one. Maybe we don't. That's all right. You can go on back a couple slides in. What's our theme for the year? You guys remember? Fourth month in. You should know it. I'm hearing it. It's just kind of, I can be the, yeah, someone is starting to, yeah, speak up. I can be the church. Every message is developed in such a way, and I want to lift you guys up and say, you can be the church, and because you can be, you should be. As a church, today's message is so very simple, but so very important. Church, we need to open our eyes and see God's interruptions in our life as an invitation into His will. And we don't do that, and we need to, because the church does that. The church accepts God's interruptions in our life. We need to stop treating it like His interruption is a horsefly while we're trying to work on some home project, because we're so focused on what we want to do that we ignore the interruption. We can't allow that to happen, because we won't be the church if we keep shooing God away. I don't know how you're supposed to agree with me on that, but give me something. Can I have some head shakes? Do you understand where I'm coming from? Stop and notice and realize that God's interruption is your invitation to join in His work. Being an April Fool, we'll take some quick notes here as we... Yes, we're back on track. Good news. Being an April Fool, this is what we want to do. We want to be an April Fool. So as we look at this whole series, this whole month, we want to reflect on just these very simple pieces here. Three little R's. I very rarely do the cheesy preacher three, okay? But we're going to do the preacher three this morning. Three R's, preacher three, a lot of cheese. But good stuff. Hopefully you remember it. The first R is realize. Realize and accept that God is interrupting your life. You got to pick up on these things. You got to notice these things. About 10 years ago, I was involved in a small group Bible study that was called Experiencing God by Henry Blackaby. And I encourage you guys, we got some small group studies that we're wanting to launch in May and June that go hand in hand with the series those months called Not a Fan. Got a shirt right here. So free advertisement there. But if you get in a small group for those couple months and you want to continue something, I would highly recommend Experiencing God. It is an amazing journey. It's 10 years old, but the message is great. And his whole deal is that the church is really missing out on God because we don't see him working, because we don't look at him working. We don't experience his working. And it goes hand in hand with what we're talking about today. We ignore his interruptions. And so he has this little graphic here that it's in your bulletin. And the whole Bible study is based off this little graphic. Realize and accept that God is interrupting your life. Did you guys get that? Okay, if you didn't, too bad. We're already moving on. We got some cool stuff left in the service, so I'm going to need to move. This graphic explains that God is always at work. God is always moving. That's number one there. God's always at work. He's always doing something. He's always at work around us. God's not lazy. He's not sitting back. He's not doing nothing. God is working. We don't see it because we ignore it. And we are constantly being invited in. He goes to number two. If you look at step number two, this is how we get involved in his work. As we have a relationship. And God pursues a continuing love relationship that is real and personal. And if, you know, some of you guys are thinking this is contrary or contradictory to Paul's story. No, not at all. God was pursuing a relationship with Paul. It needed confrontation first. He needed to know who Jesus was before he could fall in love with him. See, some people are led down that road, and sometimes you got to get down there and you got to get confronted into a place where you go, wow, I've really messed up. And now I see Jesus. Sometimes you got to get blind before you can see, right? All right, so this relationship, for those of us who know God and we have these constant interruptions, hopefully, that's the goal, we have the Ananias experience in the story, then our relationship with God and how God pursues us opens the door for God to invite us with him into his work. And through that, God speaks to us. He speaks to us in many ways by the Holy Spirit. He speaks to us through the Bible. He speaks to us through circumstances. He speaks to us through the church. And he reveals himself, his purpose, and his ways. And then after God's invitation and he speaks to you, then I love this next step, number five. It's a step that I think a lot of people pass over and they get stuck there because no one talks about this. And this is one of the things I thought was very valuable in this study, was this idea of a crisis of belief. Let me read you his words on what a crisis of belief is. God's invitation for you to work with him always leads you to a crisis of belief that requires faith and action. When God calls you into his plan, into his agenda, into his will, you're going to be faced with a crisis of belief, like Ananias. Are you sure, Lord? Sure, this is what you... It's natural. It's normal. Don't feel like you're not being a good Christian because you get through that. What happens is when you get to the crisis of belief and you pull back and you miss out on being part of the action. Don't do that. Get to the crisis of belief, experience it, feel it, know that it's going to be there, and then do it. Go forward with it. Step number six, you must make major adjustments in your life to join God in what he is doing. And then number seven is that you come to know God by experience as you obey him and he accomplishes his work through you. And that's how you get to know God better and better and better and better. But that will never happen if you don't respond to the interruptions. If you don't accept that God is interrupting your life. That God will interrupt your life. You should feel honored when he interrupts your life. Because that's exciting. And from this day forward, I hope and pray that this church and everyone that's here and everyone that gets a chance to listen to it online will view every interruption that God brings into your life as an invitation to be part of his plan. And that's exciting. Two more R's here. Second one, respond through humility, obedience, and self-sacrifice. God told Ananias, I'm going to show Paul how much he's going to have to suffer for my name. That wasn't payback. It's just what the Christian life is about. It's about self-sacrifice. It's about obedience. It's about laying down and being humble. It's about being a servant and serving the king and knowing, we'll get to the third R here, that the result benefits God's kingdom as God's will, agenda, and plan are accomplished. Those results will not happen if you don't realize and you don't respond to God's interruptions in your life. You won't see the results. And that's Blackaby's point in his book, is that we don't experience God because we don't realize the interruptions. We don't accept the interruptions. We don't respond to the interruptions. And then we sit around as Christians saying, well, God's dead. God's not doing anything. God's not active. No, you're wrong. You have not responded to his interruptions as an invitation because he is working. And he wants you to be a part of it. And church, I want you to know this morning, he wants you to be a part of it. Desperately wants you to be a part of it. Christians, I am hoping and praying that you have an Ananias moment this week. And that you respond to it as an invitation. This morning, if you've never accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord, you're on the same side of fence Paul was. You might think, well, I'm not persecuting the church. I'm not tearing the church down. No, but anyone that's outside of Christ has the same results to the end of their life. If you don't accept Christ, you don't receive forgiveness of sins. You don't receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. You don't receive eternity in heaven with God. That's what the Bible teaches. So even if you're not against the church as much as Paul was, Jesus says, if you're not for me, you're against me. That's just truth. I'm not trying to be mean. It's out of love and the same kind of confrontational love that Jesus showed Paul on the road. If you don't change, if you don't turn around, it's not going to be good for you. If you do, however, then that's your first response to God's interruption in your life as an invitation.